good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. It's church night here on the Malloy program. I don't focus on it as much as I used to, although I should. There's such madness in Christianity, Islam, and certain aspects of Judaism. Hinduism, don't even go there. This hour is sponsored by Alice in Arkansas at Healing Hollers. Her message, and this is very serious. Now listen up. She writes, due to rising temperatures, the season for shipping whipped shea mint cream is drawing to a close. That light, fluffy, minty wonder does not do well in hot, sweltering postal service trucks. So, now's the time to get your summer supply, Truth Seekers. And you'll get a 10% discount when you order before June 1st. Allison Heelan Hollers. Now, you can get there. Just go to my website, MikeMalloy.com. Click on Heelan Hollers. I've told you about this whipped shea mint. if you don't grab a couple of these, I am telling you, this stuff is so good. It's almost, what's the other one I like? The lemon hemp oil, or lemon hemp cream. Well, this has that beat. Thanks, Alice. Hey, get this stuff, folks, really. Whipped shea mint. If you haven't tried it, you don't know what you're missing. Woohoo! Get some, okay? And it's not going to cost you an arm and a leg. And this stuff is all natural. It's made out of magic from the Ozarks. Get it, will you? Thank you. All right, we have a preacher who is one sick son of a bitch. I mean, this guy is crazy. Now, having said that, he is also a monstrously repressed gay man. And the reason he's repressed is because he lives in a culture, this one, that refuses to recognize sexuality. No prefix, no suffix, just sexuality. Human sexuality. I got to say that because the right-wingers that like to do sheep out here will get all excited. Human sexuality. Listen, write this down, okay? Sexuality is a continuum. Way over here on this end, you have people who are exclusively homosexual. Way over here on this end, you have people who are exclusively heterosexual. And that vast middle group, or that middle part of the continuum, can be anything depending on your circumstances. You think I'm kidding? I'm not. But this poor bastard, this Sean Harris, the senior pastor at Berean Baptist Church in Fayetteville, North Carolina, is the type of gay man who grew up in a culture that told him, you know, this religious craziness that told him if he were homosexual, he would burn in hell, his body picked on by scorpions, spiders, and snakes through all eternity. So naturally, he's terrified by his own urges. And that's all they are. They're just urges. Big D. B-O, almost said it. Big deal. So you have urges, Reverend. So what? So, like so many hideously repressed gay people gay individuals who happen to also, not only do they bear the curse of being closeted, and that's because they do not have the courage to just state what has to be stated. Or just drop it. I mean, who cares what your sexuality is? I mean, really? What difference does it make? Shut up. Sit down. Do what you have to do. Do what you want to do. Do what feels good. But because this poor bastard grew up in that kind of a culture, he is just absolutely freaked out. It's the old projection game. There's a piece in Sunday's New York Times about this. Empirical studies now indicate that the people who are most virulently anti-gay, men and women, are people who have deeply suppressed urges. You know, it doesn't make any difference. You know, I'm not going to say deeply suppressed homosexual or deeply suppressed heterosexual. That's nonsense. To me, it's nonsense. You are what you are in a given moment. You may be inclined to exclusively heterosexuality, inclined to exclusive homosexuality. Well, good for you. But the key word there is inclined. My personal belief after studying, yes, I have, this entire subject is that sexuality is, like I said, it's on a continuum. You may be very comfortable being exclusively homosexual. You may be very comfortable being exclusively heterosexual. Okay, that's fine. If your circumstances change, though, and I mean they would have to change dramatically, I guess. Or maybe not. Maybe just opportunity. You never know. But no matter which you are or where you fall on that continuum, trying something a little bit different is really not going to hurt you. I mean, as long as you use the right kind of protection. Of course there are STDs out there. Of course you can screw yourself up. But you don't have to do that. I mean, you don't jump out of an airplane without a parachute. You wear a parachute. You know what I'm getting at. Okay, I want you to hear this guy. This is one of those homophobic little bastards I have ever heard. He's the senior pastor at Berean Baptist Church in Fayetteville, North Carolina, a strong supporter of North Carolina's proposed anti-gay Amendment 1. And in Sunday sermon, last Sunday, this freak screamed like a maniac about cracking limp wrists and punching young children. I'll tell you what. Go ahead and play it, Kathy. Just listen to this sick MF-er. Listen to this.
Well, your little son starts to act a little girlish when he's 4 years old, and instead of squashing that like a cockroach and saying, man up, son, get that dress off you and get outside and dig a ditch, because that's what boys do. You get out the camera and you start taking pictures of Johnny acting like a female, and then you upload it to YouTube and everybody laughs about it. And next thing you know, this dude, this kid, is acting out childhood fantasies that should have been squashed. Can I make it any clearer? Dads, the second you see your son dropping the limp wrist, you rock over there and crack that wrist. Man up. Give him a good punch. Okay? You're not going to act like that. You were made by God to be a male, and you're going to be a male. And when your daughter starts acting too butch,
ooh,
you rein her in. And you say, oh no. Oh no, sweetheart. You can play sports. Play them. Play them to the glory of God. But sometimes you're going to act like a girl and walk like a girl and talk like a girl and smell like a girl. And that means you're going to be beautiful. You're going to be attractive. You're going to dress yourself up. You say, can I take charge like this as a parent? Yeah, you can. You're authorized. I just gave you a special dispensation this morning to do that.
I just gave you a special dispensation to do that. You need a dispensation, Reverend Jerkass. You need one. You know what you need to do, Reverend? Get yourself naked. Go down to, let's see, where do you live over there in Fayetteville? Hell, do you know how many men lurk around in Fayetteville? There's a damn army base there, boy. You need to get yourself down there. Get your clothes off. Go someplace. Go out in the woods. Out there in them piney woods. Get out there. Don't mess with any children. No, don't. Stay away. This son of a bitch ought to be kept 10 miles from children. But go ahead. Get on out there. Get your clothes off. Get naked with one of them old paratroopers. And see what happens there, pal.
Do you want to love in times like this? The siren of the ambulance, the deadpan of the cops, shot to mark the outline where the boy first dropped. Beware the Holy Trinity, church and state and law, for every death the virus gets
that's more deadly than before.
Homophobia, the worst disease. You can't love who you want to love in times like these. Homophobia, the worst disease. You can't.
Past the hour. Can you believe that guy? Huh? that's somebody who has been washed in the blood of the Lamb. Yes, he has. He's out there leading souls to Jesus. Huh? How about that? Did you hear those people in the congregation? Amen! Beat him! Yeah! Just take hold of that little thing and twist it off. That's what y'all do with them. I don't know how to relate to that except to use it as a clown show. Martin sent that to me. Thanks, Martin. Appreciate it. But it's so obvious what has happened to this poor bastard. There's a picture of him, at Crooks and Liars. That's where you can find that video if you want it. Crooks and Liars. .org. Anyway, there's a picture of him, and, you know, he looks, I guess he'd probably be in his late 30s, early 40s. Can you imagine the burden that this guy's been living with all his life? Now, it's fun to mock him and call him a dumb son of a bitch and a hillbilly and all this other stuff. Well, you're not hillbillies in North Carolina, not in Fayetteville. No, pretty flat down there, boy. It's fun to mock him and make him the, no pun intended, the butt of a joke. But on the other hand, if you stop and consider how this poor, miserable man must have suffered all of his life because of normal sexual urges that may not have been directed toward a woman. They may have been directed toward one of his boyfriends when he was a kid, maybe somebody in the church choir. You know he had the hell beat out of him. You know this boy was just tortured in the name of Jesus. Amen. Right? But if you really get, very Martin Luther Kingish here or Jesus-like, you can open up your heart with compassion for this poor sob. I mean, it's, what a way to live your life. What a way to live your life. To be eat up with what he obviously identifies as feelings and urges instilled in him by Satan himself. And not be able to just accept himself for what he is or what he could be. How long do you suppose it'll be before this guy is found with some paratrooper in the back seat of a car someplace behind a church at 3 a.m. and the MPs show up because they got a complaint from the neighbors, and there he is with his, the paratrooper has his drawers down around his ankles, and there's old Reverend. How long do you think it's going to be?
Who was that one? Haggard?
Ted Haggard. Not Merle Haggard. Ted
right,
Haggard.
Right. Who was just vehemently denying any kind of homosexual relationship.
Not just them. I mean, it's just so damn sad. Like I say, I could work up some sympathy for these men, except for one very definite fact, and that is until they finally accept themselves either calmly, peacefully, and with respect, or have their sexuality ripped open for everybody to see because they're caught in the back seat with a paratrooper, I'd like to work up some compassion for this man. But I can't because of the damage that he and people like him, men like him, do. And that damage is incalculable.
Well, Fred Phelps had the solution, and apparently all these other pastors
are just
ignoring it. Remember, if you suspect that your son is a little effete and possibly...
No, that wasn't Fred Phelps.
Yeah, Focus on the Family.
No, Fred Phelps is that crazy bastard
from
Kansas.
Oh, no, who's
Kansas.
The Focus on the Family guy? You're right. I get them all confused. They're all
interchangeable. Take a shower with
your
son.
But you're supposed to bring your son into the shower with you and show him your manly member, and that's going to cure him of any homosexual urges once he sees that daddy has a penis.
Right.
Then he won't be gay anymore. And then you go out in the yard and...
James Dobson.
Then you go in the yard and beat your dog. Which was another interesting life lesson from Dr. Dobson.
Yeah.
Remember, he had to wrestle with, you know, he compared his satanic battles with wrestling his dachshund or some little tiny dog he had in this battle he had with his dog. And so you beat your dog and show your boy your penis and
everything will be
all is fine with the world.
Oh, my God! Where do we live? We live in hell! And I've always had the suspicion, not always, but I used to have a suspicion that we're actually living in hell. This is hell. And when we die, we're released and get to go live a normal life. You think? Or you can put your dog on the roof of your car. Uh-huh. All right, folks, we'll be back. Stay with us. Can you take much more of this? This is church night, brothers and sisters. Can I get an amen?
Hates these people. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by one of the few advertisers that has been with us since just damn near day one, Allison, Arkansas, at Heelan Hollers. And thank you, Alice. Her message, due to rising temperatures, the season for shipping whipped shea mint is drawing to a close. That's a body cream. She writes, that light, fluffy, minty wonder does not do well in hot, sweltering postal service trucks. So now's the time to get your summer supply. Truth Seekers get a 10% discount when you order before June 1st. Do this. I'm telling you, man or woman, it's great on your kids. Get this stuff. I mean, it's just whipped shea mint body cream. Wonderful stuff. Go to MikeMalloy.com and you'll see her ad there. Heelan Hollers. From the magical, mystical Ozarks, I think. Another Beck, Glenn Beck. Sucker went berserk today and murdered a whole bunch of people out in Arizona. Hear about this? J.T. Reedy, former Marine, founder of the U.S. Border Guard. That's a racist organization that goes out and kills people who come across the border without the proper papers. He was also one of Arizona's most prominent neo-Nazis. One-time member of the neo-Nazi National Socialist Movement, Reedy, 39, was a committed white supremacist, a former Republican precinct committee man, and a failed candidate for Mesa City Council. This is from USA Today. Reedy openly marched with neo-Nazis in the streets of Phoenix, Riverside, California, and elsewhere, sometimes in full battle gear, other times carrying a swastika flag or a portrait of Adolf Hitler, whom he referred to as a great white civil rights hero. Hold on just a second. I gotta call hell. Hold on a minute. Satan! Hello down there! Hey, how you doing? No, no, don't get too close to the phone. God damn, boy. Listen, is he down there yet? J.T. Reedy! Big old fat white bastard! Yeah, oh, he's there! You know what he did? Okay. So what's his punishment going to be? He's going to have to sit and naked and talk with Andy? Oh, my God. You have better than that for him, don't you, Satan? You're going to what? O-M-F-G. Okay, listen, I got to go. All right. Talk to you later. J.T. Reedy, there's a party in hell waiting for you tonight. Oh, my God. Anyway, he's an obvious Beck follower, Glenn Beck. He opened fire today inside a home in Gilbert, Arizona, near Phoenix, killing three adults and a child, an 18-month-old little girl, before taking his own life. The other victims are Reedy's live-in girlfriend, her daughter, the daughter's boyfriend, and their 18-month-old girl. There's a bunch of updates here. This is what J.T. Reedy of Arizona, who headed this phony-ass racist organization, U.S. Border Guard. Here's some of what the group says on its home page. Quote, as you are well aware, dire times have befallen our beloved country. Soaring energy prices, corporate corruption in Congress, destructive natural disasters, overseas conflicts, narco-terrorism, and gunfire at our borders. We're not going to lie to you. Our country's in terrible danger, and we are outgunned. We are under attack at this very moment, but not by invading troops or communist threat. What or who is it, you ask? Just look around your neighborhoods and your schools. Look at the violence on TV. Look at the border. America has been calling out for help to the deaf ears of the U.S. government. J.T. Reedy and his border rangers have answered that call. By the way, he was kicked his ass out of the Marine Corps for bad conduct in 1996. Of course. He's a member of the Minuteman Civil Defense Corps. Just about every group this miserable dead son of a bitch has ever been involved in was listed by the Southern Poverty Law Center as a hate group. The only thing missing here is the fact that Glenn Beck drove him insane. I bet Glenn, when he hears about stuff like this and does a little background checking, finds out that J.T. Reedy, former Marine, founder of the U.S. Border Guard, and this and that, I bet you Glenn just sits there and gets all misty-eyed and kind of stares into middle space and pours himself another glass of gin. 10th one tonight, and sits back and says, God damn, I love my audience. I love my fans. How do you feel, Beck? You feel proud? Do you? You hate-mongering bastard, you? There you go. Here's a guy who needs a bath and a job that he's qualified for. I was thinking, I read this, shoveling horse manure in a stable. I used to do that, only at a YMCA camp, didn't get paid for it, but I think Samuel Wurzelbacher ought to do that for a living, also known as Joe the Plumber. He could be known as Joe the Horse Crap Mover. He recently visited the White House, but he couldn't get in. It's because he stinks. Wurzelbacher, who served as a McCain surrogate during the 2008 presidential campaign, won the Republican nomination for Congress in Ohio's 9th district. You have as much chance of winning that, Wurzelbacher, as I have of becoming the next pope. I don't think there's more than 6 Republicans that live in that district. Anyway, go ahead, have your fantasy. You can raise some money and then, In a new campaign ad, Wurzelbacher is shown waiting at the White House gates, purportedly to get a chance to talk to President Obama. Eventually, he retreats and gives the camera an exasperated sigh. Well, it's 3 o'clock and apparently no one's home. I'd like to come back and finish this conversation. Wurzelbacher got into the political spotlight. He had his 15 minutes when he asked Obama back during the 2008 campaign about his small business tax plan at a campaign event in 2008, I think in Toledo. And Obama said, you know, I think that when you spread the wealth around, it's good for everybody. Oh, a communist! Remember all that? I think when you spread the wealth around a little bit, it's good for everybody. Ooh! Ooh! Joe Wurzelbacher just about dropped his load on that one. Ooh! The McCain campaign pounced on Obama's remark and eventually resurfaced them to suggest Obama had a socialist agenda. Jesus Christ. McCain, you are... never mind. Anyway, Joe the Plumber was referenced in debates, and soon McCain called Joe the Plumber to start making campaign appearances with him. So Joe the Plumber now has this little phony-ass video where he's standing outside the White House. Well, President really wants to talk to me. You think? You think, Joe? Or Samuel, or whatever the hell your name is? You think? He's just avoiding you, Sam. He knows that you'll... He knows that you'll just out-talk him. Hold on a second. Satan? Hello? Oh, hey, how... Man, sounds like you got a party down there. What? J.T. Reedy? The guy that killed all these people in Phoenix? Yeah, he killed a little girl. Oh, you know that. What are you going to do to him? Ah! Oh, my God. All right, well, they're coming one after another. All right, old scratch. Talk to you later. Bye. Man. There's some stuff going on in hell tonight. National Day of Prayer tomorrow. Alan in Payson, Arizona, writes me. He says it was formalized in 52 by President Harry Truman. The purpose of the day is to encourage Americans to, quote, turn to God in prayer and meditation, end quote, neither of which accomplishes anything outside the mind of the practitioner. But anyway, this annual day of collective magical thinking usually brings out the One Nation Under God crowd and the Christian nation folks. We are not a Christian nation. We are a nation of laws. One of those laws, First Amendment, the United States Constitution, ensures that all of us can practice whatever kind of hocus pocus we like. A Christian nation, i.e. a nation whose foreign policy reflects the morality espoused by Jesus Christ, a Christian nation would actually be a terrible idea for many reasons. Consider the words of Jesus in Matthew 5, verses 43 and 45, quote, "You have heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven," end quote, J.C. Now, Alan concludes, if we were really a Christian nation, Osama bin Laden would be alive today, wouldn't he? Ooh. Ooh, Alan. Boy, you can't argue with the words of Jesus, can you? We'll be right back.
Flying Monkey Free Zone. It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. It is. This hour has been sponsored by Alice at Helin Hollers down there in Arkansas. Thank you, Alice. Her message, due to rising temperatures, the season for shipping whipped shea mint is drawing to a close. That light, fluffy, minty wonder does not do well in hot, sweltering postal service trucks. So now's the time to get your summer supply. Truth Seekers get a 10% discount when you order before June 1st. And again, I'll tell you one more time, that stuff is just amazing. Just amazing. So you better get some. See, she stops making it because she can't ship it in the summer. You know why she can't ship it? Well, it gets hot in those sweltering postal service trucks. That's why. So get some, all right? And go to MikeMalloy.com, and on our page you'll see Heelan Hollers. Click and order. You will thank me. It is church night. In recognition of the Wednesdays I spent with my grandparents at prayer meeting in their Baptist church all those years ago. And the regular listeners of this program know that, and I know you're tired of hearing it, but for people who are just tuned in, what is church and what the hell is he talking about? Or you may be on your way home from prayer meeting and you mistakenly turn to this program. You know, that must be a real jolt. Well, you know, when you come for prayer meeting, you're kind of cleansed in the blood of the Lamb, so it's okay. You have your protective shield on. Don't worry about it. This is just a radio program. You know what I'm saying? But lots of people know exactly the torture of Wednesday night, that if your parents or your grandparents were heavy-duty Protestants, usually Baptists, you know, get together. Well, I guess a few Methodists do. Do Presbyterians? I don't know. Lutherans? I don't think Lutherans do. Hell, Lutherans pray all the time. But Wednesday night, whoo, Lord, a little rough. But I found it real entertaining. I didn't know it at the time. At the time, it scared the bejesus out of me, so to speak, to see, 10, 15 adults on those straight-back chairs. What do you call those chairs, Kathy, with the ladder-back chairs? Yeah. Straight back, ladder back chairs, whatever the hell they're called. Uncomfortable. So the adults would only sit there for a couple seconds, and Reverend Dunham would give a real quick, maybe 5-minute mini sermon. And then, first time I went to prayer meeting like that, as soon as he finished with the sermon, I thought everybody was standing up to leave, but they weren't. They were just getting off their chairs. Get off the chair and then get down on your knees. And most of these folks were old, bless their hearts. You know, they were just poor old people who, I thought they were old. Actually, my grandma was only in her 50s at the time. But, you know, they just turn around and get down, and a lot of them would have those Bibles with the flexible leather covers, you know what I'm talking about? Those Bibles always smell like church, too. You ever notice that? And the pages, the onion skin, almost like onion skin, the real thin pages. And they would twist and turn around, get off the chair, and get down on their knees, and Reverend Dunham would commence the praying. And, you know, he'd just given 5 minutes, so he'd only give like maybe a minute or two, and then, you know, get out of the freeway and stand aside so that, you know, some of the deacons could get to praying. If you have never heard a deacon pray, brother, sister, you have not lived. A deacon will pray. Deacon will pray the varnish off those ladder back chairs. Hallelujah! Amen. So, oh Lord, seems like it was just yesterday. That's why we do, that's why, the onion skin Bible pages are great for rolling papers. Somebody just wrote in the Malloy chat room. Oh, it was Tim from LA. Yeah, him again, huh? Oh, that's terrible. Where was I? Anyway, that's why we do Wednesday nights occasionally on this program, is in recognition of prayer meeting night, Wednesday night. And, you know, my grandparents' town in north central Ohio was, on Wednesday, a lot of businesses closed, too. You remember those days when the businesses closed on Wednesday? I don't know why it was Wednesday, but that they would close, or they'd only be open till noon. And this was not a small town. This was like 30,000 people. Well, I guess it is small, isn't it? About 30,000 people. And you could walk downtown on Main Street walk across the bridge on the Blanchard River into the heart of downtown, and it would just be so quiet on a Wednesday afternoon in the summertime. All you could hear would be those seven-year cicadas, you know. Remember that? So that's why we do, in case you're wondering. Barack Obama went to Afghanistan. And now we have this. In an uncharacteristically emotional scene for the presumptive GOP nominee, Mitt Romney today paid a surprise visit to his money in the Cayman Islands. Speaking in a bank vault surrounded by stacks of cash, Mr. Romney praised the money for, quote, the brave work you have done in the never-ending fight for freedom from federal income tax, end quote. He added, quote, thanks to your hard work, losers around the world are envious of me, and for that I salute you, end quote. Stressing that his money's mission in the Caymans was, quote, far from over, end quote, he refused to set any timetable for withdrawal. In a reference to his bid for the presidency, Mr. Romney told his money, quote, it would be an honor and a privilege to have my face on you someday, end quote. After plunging into the stacks of cash to touch many of the dollar bills individually, Mr. Romney boarded his private jet to pay a surprise visit to Switzerland. From the Borowitz Report, we'll be back after the break. Think of this. If you want to chat, we'll try to work you in. Honest. This hour is being sponsored by Anonymous in Arizona. Thanks, Anonymous. The message this hour goes out to the person who gave up their heart that then ended up in Dick Cheney's chest. We wish you had kept it. Oh, yeah. Hold on a second.
Hello, Hal? Satan? Yo, hey, How you doing with the shooter and Andy? Oh, okay. Cheney, he got somebody else's heart. Well, you know who it was? Oh, man, that's creepy. Talk to you later, old Scratch.
Ooh, God, that guy makes me nervous.
Two... quick items here from Prairie 2 regarding Barack Obama and Joe the Plumber. Prairie 2 writes, the question that Joe had for Obama in 2008 was if he, Joe, bought the plumbing business he worked for
And, of course, he was illegally doing plumbing without a license. We know that now. He, Wurzelbacher, thought it unfair that Obama wanted to raise his taxes on his income above $250,000. Never having had a business, and not likely to ever have one, Joe the plumber didn't know the difference between gross and taxable income. The typical licensed plumber only makes around $50,000 taxable income and has gotten several tax breaks under Obama. The right wing, of course, in this country still pushes the lie about small business taxes since their base is completely ignorant of how progressive income tax works. This is where somebody starting out or a business having a bad year pays less taxes. Under the conservative method, the tax burden is much higher on small business since it's based heavily on sales tax, user fees, license fees, and things like traffic camera fines. All the government services small business needs are cut in order to give free stuff to their big corporate competitors. But you can't tell that to Joe the plumber. He doesn't want the wealth spread around. Ah, pray to. I mean, what, you could say that to Joe the plumber's face, and he would just look at you and drool and talk about, well, I wanted to see the president. You know what I'm saying? And Reg at TVNewsLies.org just sent this to me, in 2011, the rich got richer, much richer. America's CEOs received a 15% pay raise last year with compensation packages for CEOs averaging $5.8 million, according to research from the research firm GMI Ratings. This was in the New York Daily News today. that's the average, $5.8 million per CEO. This is the second consecutive year of double-digit growth. In 2010, the corporate hotshots saw an average 28% jump in their compensation. So in the past 2 years, average CEO compensation has gone up 28, 38, 43%. How's your paycheck, Bubala? Huh? Did you get a 43% raise? Hey, Joe the plumber, how about you, huh, buddy? The survey, which was first reported online today by the British newspaper The Guardian, also found that CEOs in the country, this country's top 500 companies, earned an average of $12.1 million in 2011. While the past 2 years were bountiful, they follow 2 years of overall compensation declines in 2008 and 2009, of course. You know, it went down. They only made $6, $8, $10 million a year. Oh, poor babies. Michael Johnson, the head honcho at Herbalife, had the biggest payday this past year. He was paid more than $89 million. As CEO of the nutritional direct marketing company. I don't know anything about Herbalife. I just am very suspicious always of pyramid companies like that. Isn't that a pyramid company? I don't know. I have no idea. I don't care. Meanwhile, the average American household saw real median income drop 3.5%. And some of you dumb bastards in the right wing wonder what Occupy is all about. You stupid idiots. You really are so unbelievably stupid. You just don't get it, do you? Go ahead, dress up in your camo and go murder your girlfriend and 18-year-old like or 18-month-old like this freak in Arizona did. That's how you get your kicks. Meanwhile, the CEOs and the big shots in this country just laugh at your useless asses. Go ahead, arm yourselves as much as you want. It really doesn't matter because when the day comes and there's 10,000 of you marching with your rep weapons, they'll send a squad of Marines and waste all of you in about 15 minutes. You poor, miserable clowns. So, the average household income in 2007 was $53,168. In 2010, it was $51,287. Man. Well, there you have it. The CEOs are doing just fine. The 1%, the 0.1%, doing just great. How about you? How about me? How about the person next to you? How about all you folks in the Malloy chat room? How about you people listening on Sirius? How about your internet listeners? Radio listeners? Yo, how you doing? Podcast people who get this tomorrow morning. Did you see your income go up 43% in the past 2 years? Are you making some of that big money? Huh? Well, if you're a right winger, you know, do anything you can to prevent any kind of check on that kind of income, because you know, someday you'll probably be in the top 0.1% too, right, booby? Sure you will. Of course you will. Absolutely you will. This America, you can do anything you want to do. You can rise high as you want. Just grab hold of them old bootstraps. You sorry bastards. Oh my God. Hypocrisy is a funny thing, mostly. That's from Al Babe, the writer, artist, formerly known as Al Garden. All right, let me start over. Hypocrisy is a funny thing, mostly. That's from Al Babe, the writer, artist, formerly known as Al Gordon. No, not formerly, formally known as Al Gordon. Al sends me this stuff all the time from Crookston Liars, put together by Heather. Scott Brown is really a hypocrite for being more than happy to take advantage of the provisions of the Affordable Care Act, which allows Scott Brown's daughter, you know, the senator from Massachusetts, allows his daughter to remain insured. But he's not so worried about whether other Americans might have the same benefit. Here it comes. Senator Scott Brown, Republican of Maine, Massachusetts, ran as the 41st vote against Obama's health care reform bill in a special election to replace late Senator Ted Kennedy. He voted three times to repeal the law and take away health care coverage from 30 million Americans who will benefit from the law by 2014 and the millions who are already taking advantage of his provisions. But yesterday, the Tea Party champion and great opponent of Obamacare admitted something astonishing. His 23-year-old daughter is one of the 2.5 million young Americans who are benefiting from a regulation that allows young people to stay on their parents' health care plan until age 26. We'll be right back.
You're gonna retake the sky.
If Shannon West Helena.
Doing talk radio right from the left, it's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. So, Senator Scott Brown, who is going to be defeated in November by Elizabeth Warren, when asked if he took advantage of the Affordable Care Act provision that allows his daughter to stay on his family policy until she's 26, he said, "Of course I do." He told that to the Boston Globe. "Of course I do." Brown is insuring his daughter, Ayla, a professional singer who's 23, under a provision of the law requiring that family plans cover children up to age 26. Brown said the extended use of his congressional coverage is not inconsistent with his criticism of the federal law. Of course not. Because the same coverage could be required by individual states. Oh, I see. I see. I'm not against floods that murder millions of people because it could rain tomorrow or something. Where's your logic, Scott Brown? I thought this guy was smart. Oh, that's right. He's a Republican. Never mind. Elizabeth Warren responded by saying, quote, Scott Brown campaigned against health care reform, and when he got the Senate seat, he voted to block health care reform. We just learned today that he is using that same health care reform act to make sure that his adult daughter gets covered on his health insurance policy at the same moment that he wants to repeal it for everyone else. This is wrong. Well, no, it's not. It's your typical right-wing hypocrisy. Of course, Scott Brown. Like he said, of course I do. That's not inconsistent with Scott Brown's position because Scott Brown is a goddamn hypocrite. He's a Republican. This is what they do. Spiders spin webs. Andy goes to hell. Scott Brown is a hypocrite. Dear God. What else do we have here tonight on Church Night? Oh, wait a second. Here is Carl in Nashville, Tennessee. Hello, Carl.
You know, how you doing?
I'm all right.
You know, well, I'm going to tell you this. I am so glad that the Zelda Plumber, the 40-year-old to 50-year-old white male, the base of the Republican Party, finally, some of those people are finally starting to wake up. Because I'm telling you, from the days of George Herbert Walker Bush calling Ronald Reagan's economic plan voodoo economics, I'm thinking to myself, surely these people, and I'm a child. I was a child. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, surely these people are not going to buy into this trickle-down economics that they're trying to put. And I'd be damned if it's been the law of the land for the past 32, 33 years in America. Mm-hmm. And it's taken these people this long. I don't understand what is so hard to real for these people that continuously vote Republican to see,
you know,
wait a minute, we didn't get our 40 acres of trickle-down.
Yeah, I'm here.
It's been 30 years and it hasn't worked.
Right, and where's the mule? But I'll tell you, Carl, this is what I've come, this is how I've concluded, this is the conclusion I've come to, because I could never figure this out either. Why do people buy lottery tickets? Why do people buy a lottery ticket when the payout is like $150 million? Even though they're told that the odds against your winning is 350 million to one. But folks go ahead and buy the lottery ticket because they say, well, somebody's got to win, and most times somebody does. Well, that's the same thing. This is the trick bag that capitalism puts everybody in. Capitalism says, look, you can rise up too from the shop floor. You can be a Steve Jobs. Just keep voting against your own financial and economic interests right now, and the day will come on that great getting up morning where you'll discover something that will make you a trillionaire. I mean, what kind of nonsense is this?
It is idiocy at its best. I'm telling you, as a youngster, I mean, growing up through my teenage years, and I'm going to be honest with you, the black people that I knew, that I grew up around, that was aware of economics, understood how crap the trickle down economics was.
Sure.
And we couldn't believe how our white friends just
bought into it.
We're like, why do you keep falling for this lie?
Right.
And the Republicans have been a one-trick pony ever since Ronald Reagan, and it does not work. It defies logic. But here's the good thing about it. They're running out of numbers, because the same thing that happened to old white men is the same thing that happened to any other old man on this planet. They die.
That's true.
And their base is going to go right along with it. Hey, man, have a good evening.
That's true. Thanks, Carl. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Every black friend I've ever had has said to me, either directly or indirectly, Malloy,
yeah,
Why are white people so weird? Y'all are just so strange. And I don't have an answer. I just say, I don't know, man. I don't know.
Show all substance, no abuse.
Yeah, 25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Anonymous in Arizona. Anonymous message is, quote, this hour goes out to the person who gave up their heart that then ended up in Dick Cheney's chest. We wish you had kept it. Ooh, Anonymous. Let's depart from the fun and frivolity that we're having here tonight with something that is pretty scary. Okay, can we do that? And we'll get back to this other stuff in a minute. But an urgent request to UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon dated yesterday. And it is signed by 72 Japanese organizations, also signed by Kyoto University Nuclear Research Institute, the former ambassador to Switzerland and to Senegal, the former United Nations diplomat. Most of these are all Japanese people. Here's what it says. Recently, former diplomats and experts both in Japan and abroad stressed the extremely risky condition of the Fukushima Daiichi Unit 4 spent nuclear fuel pool, and this is being widely reported by world media. Robert Alvarez, senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies, which is one of the best-known experts on spent nuclear fuel, stated that in Unit 4 there is spent nuclear fuel which contains cesium-137 that is equivalent to 10 times the amount that was released at the time of the Chernobyl nuclear accident. Thus, if an earthquake or other event were to cause this pool to drain, this could result in a catastrophic radiological fire involving nearly 10 times the amount of cesium-137 released by the Chernobyl accident. Nearly all of the 10,893 spent fuel assemblies at the Fukushima Daiichi plant sit in pools vulnerable to future earthquakes, with roughly 80 times more long-lived radioactivity than released at Chernobyl. 80 times more. Nuclear experts from the U.S. and Japan, such as Arne Gunderson, Robert Alvarez, Hiroaki Koide, Masashi Goto, Mitsuhaye Murata, a former Japanese ambassador to Switzerland, and Akio Matsumura, a former UN diplomat, have continually warned against the high risk of the Fukushima Unit 4 nuclear fuel pool. U.S. Senator Roy Wyden, after his visit to the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant on 6 April 2012, issued a press release on 16 April, pointing out the catastrophic risk of Daiichi Unit 4, calling for urgent U.S. government intervention. Senator Wyden also sent a letter to Ichiro Fujisaki, Japan's ambassador to the United States, requesting Japan to accept international assistance to tackle this crisis. We Japanese civil organizations express our deepest concern that our government does not inform its citizens about the extent of risk of the Fukushima Daiichi Unit 4 spent nuclear fuel pool. Given the fact that collapse of this pool could potentially lead to catastrophic consequences with worldwide implications, what the Japanese government should be doing as a responsible member of the international community is to avoid any further disaster by mobilizing all the wisdom and all the means available in order to stabilize this spent nuclear fuel. It is clearly evident that Fukushima Daiichi Unit 4 spent nuclear fuel pool is no longer a Japanese issue, but an international issue with potentially serious consequences. Therefore, it is imperative for the Japanese government and the international community to work together on this crisis before it becomes too late. We are appealing to the United Nations to help Japan and the planet in order to prevent the irreversible consequences of a catastrophe that could affect generations to come. We herewith make our urgent request to you as follows. 1. The United Nations should organize a nuclear security summit to take up the crucial problem of the Fukushima Daiichi Unit 4 spent nuclear fuel pool. And 2, the United Nations should establish an independent assessment team on Fukushima Daiichi Unit 4 and coordinate international assistance in order to stabilize the unit's spent nuclear fuel and prevent radiological consequences with potentially catastrophic consequences. Ah. Okay. Now, the thing about that plea by Japanese officials, and it was signed by also in addition 72 Japanese organizations. The thing about this warning is that the main thing, it is being ignored. It's now granted this was only submitted to the United Nations on April 30th. And today is May 2nd. So what was that, Monday? International media are not really giving this the attention, I don't think, that is absolutely necessary here. I don't know what the release of all of this nuclear material would do. I don't know how catastrophic, that's the word these Japanese scientists and diplomats are using, is catastrophic events, events that will go on for generations, radiation poisoning. I don't know. If I am to determine how important something is by the importance assigned to that event or that story by media, global media, then I have to conclude this is not all that important. On the other hand, global media have an interest in not reporting this with the degree of intensity and seriousness and urgency that the 72 Japanese organizations and this handful of Japanese diplomats are asking the UN to give it. So what happens if this request is ignored? Now, this is an issue that I think, for once, the United States, China, and Russia could agree on instantly. I don't think there would be any veto on any plan. Not this. Especially China and Russia, because of prevailing winds. Now, I realize a lot of people are saying, well, Mike, it goes from west to east, so China would be okay. No, China wouldn't. And those prevailing winds that go west to east will hit huge chunks of Siberia. And with global warming, with hot planet in effect, there's no telling what direction the jet stream may go. There's no telling what ocean currents are going to do. But it is clear, isn't it? I mean, is this just nonsense? Is this nothing to worry about? Is this just another alarmist story? Or does this require a global cooperation? I mean, is this the event that a lot of people have talked about for generations? Well, what we need in order to unify everybody on Earth is something, a catastrophe that has the potential to wipe out everybody on Earth. I don't know. Is that what this is? Is this that event? A lot of people say, well, no, it's going to take a... an asteroid about the size of a train engine heading towards the Earth, or better yet, about the size of a apartment building. You know, because if that hits, then all life on Earth ends. And that would unify everybody to do what?
Well, to get rockets up there and divert it.
Okay, yeah. But what about this? This is not zooming at us from, you know, some asteroid belt someplace. This is here, and it's now, and I don't know. I have no idea. I know that the Japanese government, like all governments, is lying. I do know that. I mean, it's the nature of government in a situation like this to lie. They can't help themselves. Now, if there is another earthquake, and these cooling pools that contain these thousands, 10,000 spent fuel assemblies, is put in jeopardy, if it starts to crack or break or the water drops and these things are exposed, then the Japanese government will tell the truth. Then Ban Ki-moon and the United Nations will pay attention. But the problem is, there's a good chance here, according to these experts, that then it'll be too late. I mean, really too late. I mean, seriously, too effing late. Matilda that I've never heard. That's kind of a new tune. But we're playing that in remembrance of what was the movie? On the Beach. You can watch the movie. You can also read the book. On the Beach. Neville Shute, Australian writer. Now, if Blue is listening, don't call. Thank you. Waltzing Matilda, Waltzing Matilda. So anyway, by the way, this hour is being sponsored by Anonymous in Arizona. His message, this hour goes out to the person who gave up their heart that then ended up in Dick Cheney's chest. We wish you had kept it. Yeah. So anyway, the Fukushima event, the Daiichi nuclear plant, the Unit 4 spent nuclear fuel pool. It has 10 times the cesium-137 that was released at the time of the Chernobyl incident. In addition, these 10,893 spent fuel assemblies that are sitting in those pools and vulnerable to future earthquakes have roughly 85 times more long-lived radioactivity then released at Chernobyl. 85 times. That's a massive figure. You know, doubling is bad enough, but 85 times, I realize it's not doubling 85 times, but it's 85 times more radioactivity than was released at Chernobyl. And the pictures from Chernobyl are pretty stark, although it appears that the wildlife is thriving there. Have you seen those pictures? So maybe the wildlife in Japan and Kamchatka and the rest of Siberia and Alaska and the Bering Peninsula, the Bering Sea and Western Canada and the United States, maybe they'll thrive too, huh? What do you think? Is it worth the gamble? So this letter has been submitted to UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. Urgent request for UN intervention to stabilize the Unit 4. Spent fuel pool. And again, I know I said this before last break, but why isn't this, why isn't this front and center? Did I see a report today, honest to God, on either, I don't know where it was, but somebody's reporting it, some newspaper, television network, television station, that one of these Kardashian women is thinking about running for public office. Wow. Really? Man. Well, that's worth talking about as nuclear radiation spreads across the northern hemisphere. Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda, waltz you'll come, waltzing Matilda with me. Hiroaki Koide, Kyoto University Nuclear Reactor Research Institute. Mitsuhayi Murata, former ambassador to Switzerland and to Senegal, and also a board member of the Global System and Ethics Society in Japan. Akio Matsumura, former United Nations diplomat. Robert Alvarez, senior scholar, Institute for Policy Studies in Washington. And Masashi Goto, former nuclear plant engineer in Japan, and 72 Japanese organizations have signed this urgent petition to the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. The essence of this is please help. Please help, because we are on the cusp of a disaster, unlike, I assume they're saying, unlike anything that this planet has seen before. I mean, unless you go back into geological time, if you go back 57 million years ago, or you don't have to go back that far, go back to the explosion of Krakatoa east of Java. And didn't that cause what was referred to later as the year or the decade or whatever it was without a summer? Because of the debris that was thrown into the atmosphere. So, I don't know. Maybe this isn't so bad, huh? But nuclear radiation is different, isn't it, from volcanic ash? I mean, it is, right? So, I don't know. I hate to close out the hour here with such a bummer, but there you have it. Let's see if the Times or the Post or anybody in international media reports on that petition filing with the UN. It was filed on Monday. Tomorrow's Thursday. Wow. All right, stick around. We'll be back for the third and final hour of the program tonight. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour. You are still listening to the Malloy program. Last night, when we had several various eyewitness reports about what was going on with the Occupy May Day demonstrations and celebrations in this country, we commented, of course, on how the cameras always go to the violence. And no matter how minuscule or inconsequential the, quote, violence, end quote, may be. Now, I'm not minimizing violence that can occur at demonstrations. No, not at all. But the point I was trying to make, and I truly believe this, the people who are involved with Occupy are not the type to use these kinds of tactics. There obviously is a very serious attempt, as there always has been, in mass movements, an attempt by the authorities, by right wingers. In this case, it's my understanding that this filthy, vomitous Glenn Beck has been urging people to get involved in these demonstrations and do just this. So you can see Beck's hand on this. If Breitbart were not dead, you would see Breitbart's hand in it. This is what these rat bastards do. But we talked about this last night, about how to contain. Is there any way that Occupy can contain this kind of violence? Or neutralize it? Or short-circuit it? Or back in the day, you would say, well, surround the people doing this and love-bomb them. Yeah, there's a term from the 60s, the 70s, the more neurotic. Well, we're going to love bomb them. How are you going to do that? Well, we're going to surround them and just love them. How'd that work out? Not very well. You know, my theory is surround them and fist bomb them. But, you know, that's violence. And, you know, some right-wing turd now will put that on his website. Lib Talker says beat Occupy dissenter. Go ahead, jerks. Put it out there. You know, always brings in more audience. But so we batted this around, so to speak, and I got a couple of emails regarding that that came in overnight. This is from Reg at TV News Lives. Mike, we had hundreds of thousands of people march against the war, Iraq war, in NYC and Washington over and over. Without incidents of any kind. See, she's pointing out you don't have to go back to the 70s. You go back to the early part of this century. This decade. No, this century. Of course, Reg goes on, we also got no coverage from corporate media. And Twitter and Facebook had not yet been developed. So there was nothing of interest to report. Hundreds of thousands of people marched against the war. Yawn. Times have changed. This is a great news story to discredit Occupy. It is as contrived and coordinated as all the daily so-called news broadcasts on the infotainment networks that pass as news sources. Every major TV and print outlet has focused on the, quote, violence, end quote, and the arrests. Photos of police confronting protesters are everywhere. This is a setup. The May Day Occupy protests today, yesterday were international. You know for sure that not a single foreign protest will be shown. Same old, Reg. Well, that's the part. If we had a responsible news media in this country, if we had responsible reporting. Now, again, let me say, because I don't want to just blanket everyone who is involved in what passes for journalism today as being inept, incompetent, corrupt, and unable to flesh out the truth. Some writers, some photojournalists still are able to do that. They are very, very, very few. As far as mass consumption news is concerned, though, it's all garbage. You know it as well as I do. You know that. You know it's garbage. I'm not going to go, the corporate media, the right-wing media, the liberal media, although I drop those terms in sometimes. But you know as well as I do that what passes for mainstream media these days is totally ineffective, corrupt. It does not do what the First Amendment charges it to do, by implication. So, this idea that Americans are getting a full picture of what's happening with Occupy is simply not true. Simply not true. Kevin wrote in about the answer to violence at marches. Kevin writes, Mike, though the majority of the Occupy movement is nonviolent, a few factors almost make violence inevitable. One, as you said, agents, provocateurs, and infiltrators have and always will infect the ranks of any movement. Two, police are often initiate the violence with no provocation whatsoever. Three, given this, sooner or later, someone from Occupy is bound to react to that violence, particularly when the police violence is directed toward women and elderly or disabled persons. How long would it take you to react if the police began manhandling Kathy and pepper spraying her without her doing anything at all? I may be more cynical than most, Kevin writes, but I believe that Occupy is a life and death struggle for the basic human rights of all Americans to be upheld. I believe that violence, though I don't advocate it, is bound to happen, mostly on the police side, as we have seen. But eventually, anyone gets tired of being beaten up and pepper sprayed. While they continually preach nonviolence and the authorities continue to violate these people's civil rights and perpetrate violence against them, teach-ins will help, but at some point, enough is enough. And when does that point come? I know my position will be a bit controversial. I'm not advocating violence, simply asking the question of how long do we continue to accept the violence against us before we react? Kevin. All right, let me go back to what you said. How long would it take me to react if police began manhandling Kathy and pepper spraying her? This is the risk that the nonviolent movement takes by definition. I'm sorry. At what point do you pull out a hammer and start smashing people who are attacking you? If you are committed to nonviolence, the answer to that is never. Never. If you remember the movie Gandhi, and I believe the movie was fairly loyal to the actual history of Gandhi as he led what started out as a peaceful revolution against the British. It wasn't until after the British left and partition had to occur that the violence really began, and that was Indian against Indian. I'm very simplifying it. I understand that, but just bear with me here a second. The whole nonviolent movement, whether it was Gandhi or Martin Luther King Jr. in this country, or Jesus in 2,000 years ago, the nonviolent movement means just that. If you remember in the movie Gandhi, how many people who tried to approach the, the British compound or salt processing plant, I forget what it was, but wave after wave of Indian people, men and women, would approach and be beaten to the ground. Another wave would approach, be beaten to the ground. Nobody raised their hand against the troops that were hired by the British to do this violence to them. So what would I do if Kathy were pepper sprayed and manhandled? I think she would understand fully before she ever went to the demonstration what the risks were and what she had to endure. I know I would. I've been there. So now more on this when we come back. Stay with us.
Misinformation follows like a plague. Nobody knew from time to time if the plans were changed. Oh, 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 if the plans were changed. You can beat us with wires. You can beat us with chains. Rules, but you know you can't outrun a history train.
talk to the Flying Monkey Right. It's Mike Malone.
Past the hour. So, answering Kevin's email here about how to deal with violence at marches, and Kevin makes the point that eventually people crack when peaceful demonstrators, when they are attacked by police or by the authorities. And I hate to say it, but I think anyone who trains or has worked with nonviolence will tell you that is what it's all about. That you cannot, if you are committed to peaceful, nonviolent resistance, then you can't fight back. Do you have to be pepper sprayed in the eyes and the mouth? Well, you try to protect yourself as best you can before you get in a situation where that may occur. But if it does occur, of course, you won't react because at that point you're on the ground trying to breathe. And you may die depending on your physical condition. If you have different attendant physical issues that you're dealing with, if you're on certain medications and you get pepper sprayed in the mouth and the nose and the eyes and the ears, yeah, you could die. So, as far as being hit or shoved or pushed or beaten or arrested, the idea behind nonviolence is what it says. Passive resistance. Now, as Kevin points out, you know, Kevin is reacting the way most of us would react. At what point do you say enough of being beaten to the ground is enough? If you are committed to nonviolent, massive resistance, that point never comes because you understand before you take part that no matter what sort of violence is perpetrated against you, you will not respond in kind. That's a tough one. That's why very few people can handle that, because the reaction is to fight back. And somehow, I think the few times I have attended some very minimalist nonviolence training myself, that has been one of the toughest things that the organizers or the facilitators have to explain and have to teach, is that nonviolence means nonviolence. And that when you put yourself up against the state in any one of its many, many forms, and you are doing so with the idea that you are not going to fight back, then you must hold to that. Now, the theory is that you gain the moral high ground in doing this, that you understand from the beginning that the laws or the policies that you are resisting with your body are immoral, unjust, anti-life. You understand that. So enforcing the state to respond to your presence with force, in other words, using passive resistance to force the state to respond with its kind of force, gives the movement the moral authority that's necessary for the movement to succeed. Take a look at the American Civil Rights Movement. Take a look at Indian independence. Take a look at, and then on the other hand, if you want to see how violence reacts, take a look at the struggles in Northern Ireland, the struggles in Algeria. So the answer to Kevin here, he says the teachings will help, but at some point enough is enough. When does that point come? If you are committed to nonviolence, that point just does not come. You have transcended that point before you even begin. You have decided inside yourself that that point doesn't exist. Now, that's difficult. That is damn near impossible. I've never been put to that test. I don't know if I could do that. At this point in my life, I don't know. I really don't. But that's a question for everyone to answer if they are going to participate in what is defining itself as a nonviolent passive resistance. Now, the way to overcome it is to put so many people in the street that the police can't. I mean, how in the hell do you knock heads or pepper spray 5 million people? Well, you don't. If you are the police state and you're going to react to that, you bring out the machine guns. You bring out the troops. But there is no police force on earth that is going to hold back the tide of 3 million people walking down Michigan Avenue in Chicago or Fifth Avenue in New York or Peachtree Street in Atlanta. There is no police force on earth that will be able to confront 3, 4, 5 million people who are involved in civil disobedience and passive resistance to policies of the state that are no longer acceptable. So, that's the answer, Kevin, as best I can do. More on this when we come back. Stay with us.
Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You are on.
Mike Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
In the air, from those gnats in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the
25 before the hour. We're focusing a little bit here on, you know, some comments about what we were talking about last night. The violence, excuse me, the violence that is showing itself at some of the Occupy demonstrations, certainly yesterday, violence that obviously has nothing whatsoever to do with the Occupy movement in spirit or in fact. And the people doing this are doing it to discredit the movement. And if the movement is to be discredited, one has to assume that that attempt is being made by people on the other side of the issue. The other side of the issue is fairness, justice, economic justice, equal opportunity. You know what the issues are. So who's on the other side of those issues from Occupy? That's right. So at the same time, this awful conspiracy that exists of media to, especially electronic media, to send the cameras and the photographers to the scenes of violence. Forget the fact that there are 50,000 people peacefully resisting capitalism. If there are three who are throwing bricks and smashing windows, those three, not the 49,997, no, those three will get the cameras. The other 49,000 will get nothing. Bruce Enberg writes, violence plays into the hands of the police, and the description of the vandals yesterday suggests they are professionals. Well-organized and all dressed in brand-new clothing, if the Occupy protesters attempted to interfere with these people, whether they are plants or not, the so-called bad apples will be protected by the police since they serve their purpose. Have you heard of a single vandal being apprehended by the police? The only solution is massive numbers so that the police are overwhelmed by the peaceful protesters. Exactly the point I was making before the break. If you have 3 million people walking down a major thoroughfare in one of America's major cities, there is no way to resist that. That's why I'm being very oversimplifying this completely right now. And I understand this, but the larger point is what the larger point is. Peaceful resistance is just that. But Here's another oversimplification. How many times have you seen video from massive demonstrations in France or in Germany or in Italy or in Spain where there is a police presence? But the numbers are so huge that the police understand there is nothing they can do, at which point usually the National Guard in these countries is put on alert, or the army, because this it ceases being a police, it ceases being a law and order issue, and becomes one of how do we contain 1 million, 2 million, 5 million of our own citizens who are on the move. Now, if that were to happen in this country, just once. And how many times have we talked about this? One day of 10, 15, 20 million people in the streets, in the cities of the United States, then the points of debate would be realigned completely. You put 20 million people, 20 million Americans, that's not even that. What is that, 8% of the population? It's not even 10%. You put 20 million people in the streets in this country, what do you think would happen? Do you think these goddamn white-shirted freaks, these cops in New York, these supervisors, would walk up to a crowd that size and pepper spray the girls on the front line or the boys who are holding signs? Do you think that would happen? Of course it would not. Who said it? There's safety in numbers. Massive nonviolent resistance. If we're serious, if we're serious about ending the control that the 0.1% has over everybody else, if we are serious about the corruption of capitalism and bringing it to an end, if we are serious about the warmongering nature of this administration and just about every previous American administration going back to Teddy Roosevelt, if we are serious about economic justice, if we're serious about justice, period, then why don't we have 15, 20, 30 million people in the streets? Just once. One time. Once. That's all it takes. I've never been able to answer that question. And why do I scream it? Because I get very frustrated. I get very frustrated. You know, we don't yet live under a military dictatorship. We don't. We do still have some movement, the ability to move, to move this way, to move that way. We still have the ability to resist. None of us really yet believe that there's such a thing as a First Amendment zone. The whole goddamn country is a First Amendment zone. A lot of us still believe that. A lot of us still believe in the Fifth Amendment. A lot of us still believe in the Eighth Amendment, the Tenth Amendment. A lot of us still believe this stuff. Now, the right-wing crazies and some of the left-wing crazies will continue, most, if not all, right-wing crazies, a few of the left-wing crazies will tell you that the police state is coming, the police state is coming, the police state is coming. Oh, they're building concentration camps. Oh, they're doing this, they're doing that. Well, then why are we just sitting here? If that is true, when do you start your resistance? After the streets are filled with troops? After the Constitution has been suspended? Ask Japanese Americans, the ones that are still alive, who are citizens of the United States, what happened to them when the great liberal, and he was, FDR, ordered American citizens into detention camps because of their race. So when do you resist? When do you put 30 million people in the streets? If the time were to come when a right-wing fascist coup occurs in this country, and it has come close a couple of times, and Obama's not the man who's going to pull it off. Come on. a right-wing fascist coup will come from the right. Obama is what Obama is, but he's not a right-wing Nazi. He just isn't. I mean, come on. We have plenty of those wandering around. We have scores of them who work at Fox, the Rupert Murdoch terror organization. We have even more who populate and infest right-wing talk radio. We have them out here with these crazed goddamn jumping in the bushes right-wing militant groups, you know, run around in Idaho and Michigan brandishing their weapons, you know, with their big-ass beer bellies and their shaved heads and their little funky tattoos. That's where it's going to come from. It's not going to come from liberals, progressives, left-wingers, communists. It's not going to come from there. And it's damn sure not going to come from Barack Obama. So, what do you want to do? What do you want to do? How many signs and portents do there have to be? How many times do you have to read, the 14 defining characteristics of fascism before you get it? How much history do you have to know about? How many trends do you have to witness before, you know, a light bulb like in a cartoon goes off over your head and you go, this is not the way it's supposed to be in the United by God States of America. How many times are you going to just sit there while these crazy right-wing Christian ministers or right-wing Islamist imams or whoever the hell it is who is preaching this violence? Now, in this country, it just so happens it's mostly right-wing Christian preachers. But, I mean, seriously, this is a question I think everybody has to think about. If you're a citizen of this country, if you live here, if you have a stake in this country, children, grandchildren, nieces, nephews, mamas, daddies, cousins, whatever you have here, how long are you going to watch all this happen and decide, consciously decide, well, no, I don't think I'll go out in the street today. No, I don't think I'll participate in a massive 30 million person march for justice. Nah, not today. Maybe tomorrow. Maybe not even tomorrow. I've got something I got to do tomorrow. This is the part that is so sad. That's the word that pops into my head. So sad for me is to understand the necessity of putting that many millions of people in the street, if we're serious, and how far we are away from actually doing it. Before the hour, the other topic that we talked about last night that got some comment in my email box this morning was the testimony by, or not testimony, but this new book by Jose Rodriguez, who was the CIA director appointed by Bush, who was responsible for the policies of torture. Not individually, but he had to sign off on them. And he has a book out, and his crowing about how torture works, when anyone who understands that horror understands fully that it doesn't work. You get from the person being tortured exactly what you want, except for one thing, and that's the truth. You will get anything to make the torture stop. And it's my understanding that when a person figures out, the person being tortured, who figures out what it is that will stop the torture, then there's a torrent of information about that. All of it, of course, irrelevant to what the torturer is trying to get from the person he's torturing. That makes sense? Rodriguez, on the other hand, says, oh, no, it was very effective. We got all kinds of information. Just about every authority under the Bush crime family, now that that authority has disappeared and it's been handed off to the Obama administration, all of those people from the Bush administration, especially the military or the people involved in interrogation, have come out and admitted that no good evidence was developed as a result of torturing people. Nothing. But then you have a freak like this Jose Rodriguez who continues to maintain that torture's good, torture's effective, torture works, torture's wonderful. Michael and Roswell writes, some of the Rodriguez business undoubtedly goes back to the 1954 so-called Doolittle Report, which advised the CIA at the time that the enemy we faced then was so dangerous that we had no choice but to adopt methods and techniques that would go beyond what that implacable enemy would utilize. So a variation on we had to destroy the village to save it has been in effect for almost 70 years. It's no wonder that a sociopath like Rodriguez was in charge of the CIA's operational division. Sociopathy has been policy for a long, long time. Michael and Roswell. I'm not familiar with the Doolittle Report, but as Michael points out, advised the CIA that the enemy we faced then was so dangerous. Who was the enemy we faced then? Well, you remember who. The communists, the international communist conspiracy. We had just come out of the Korean War, so-called. There was ample evidence that while American troops were willing to annihilate South Korean civilians, because I guess it was difficult, you know, they all looked the same, that kind of an attitude. But the atrocities that were committed by American troops against South Korean civilians is documented. Nobody talks about it. The Korean War is a forgotten war anyway. You know, we lost, 54,000 Americans in that one. God only knows how many Koreans died. But that's, yeah, it's another little blip in American empire, in American resistance to the Soviet empire. That is, it's the forgotten war. There are Korean veterans. They are starting to disappear, too. As the World War II veterans are disappearing. And nobody remembers. Nobody remembers the Korean War. I remember the day that my grandmother, I was very young at the time, but I remember the day that my uncle came into the house, in my grandmother's house, on a Sunday evening. And he was all agitated, and my grandmother said, "What's wrong with you?" And he said, "The North Koreans have just crossed the 38th parallel and invaded South Korea." And there was a gasp. I didn't know what the hell they were talking about. I was a little kid, you know, like, what? And I remember, this is how weird it was, going to church with my grandparents that night and hearing the preacher standing in the pulpit. I was a little kid. The preacher said, "Tonight will mark one of the darkest days in American history." I didn't know what the hell they were talking about. But nobody remembers the Korean War. All that to get to my point, which is, the atrocities committed by American forces in the South and by North Koreans in the North were almost unspeakable. That's where your the movie The Manchurian Candidate comes from. The torture techniques that were used by the North Koreans are torture techniques that we have adopted. And let me remind you, anyone who needs reminding, when the Japanese High Command was put on trial in Tokyo Bay, members of the Japanese military who were convicted of using so-called waterboarding or controlled drowning, which we use now, I know we don't use anymore, right? Those members of the Japanese military were executed for that. For waterboarding. Executed by American firing squads or American executioners hanging. I think most of them were executed by firing squad. And now we had 8 years of an administration who told us, oh, no, well, you know, waterboarding. It's just, what did this filthy, stinking pig Limbaugh say one time? It was like college fraternity hazing. Well, to paraphrase somebody, you give me Limbaugh and waterboarding technique, and I'll have that fat son of a bitch confessing to the assassination of Abraham Lincoln within 30 minutes. Within 3 minutes. But I digress. Some of the comments we had from last night's Fun Fest here on the Malloy program. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.